Hello, hello, and welcome to this edition of the Retail Gazette Unpacked podcast. I'm your host, Kieran Howells. Today, I'm sitting down with Oscar Strachan, who is an e-commerce strategist. He works for a company you may have heard of called Columbus Global, but essentially, he is just extremely knowledgeable about what's happening in the e-commerce space and retail as a whole. And we're going to be talking about a range of subjects, really, but mainly customer expectations, personalization, privacy, efficiency, ethics, marketplaces, and the expectations of different consumer demographics, mainly kind of age-related, really. It's going to be a really interesting conversation. I'm very much looking forward to speaking to Oscar, and let's go ahead and dive straight in.
So hello, I'm Oscar Strachan. I am an e-commerce strategist at Columbus Global. I have been excited to work on this podcast with you, Kieran, because I really feel that the topics and questions we're going to cover truly highlight the key trends and strategies for retailers to meet the ever-growing customer expectations that are upcoming in 2026 and beyond.
So it's really, really great to be here with you, Oscar. Thanks so much for making the time. Let's go ahead and dive in with the first question then. And that is, it's clear that customer expectations are evolving rapidly right now. So in your view, with all of your experience, what are the biggest shifts in customer behaviour and expectations that retailers really should be aware of in 2026?
So in 2026, I think the biggest shift is that customers see themselves as co-creators of the retail experience rather than passive buyers. They expect more than good products at a fair price. They want relevance, transparency, and immediacy. That means hyper-personalized offers, consistent experiences across every touchpoint, and genuine commitment to sustainability and ethical practices, all delivered with clarity and conviction. Time, trust, and technology are now the real currency in retail, and customers are very quick to move on if any of these are lacking. At the same time, shopper behavior has become truly channel agnostic. Customers expect to start, pause, and finish their journey anywhere. Browse on mobile, buy via an app, collect in store, return via a locker, with consistent pricing, stock, and service throughout. This is pushing retailers beyond omnichannel into a genuinely unified commerce where a single view of inventory, a modern OMS, and a unified customer profile makes stores operate as mini fulfillment hubs and digital touchpoints feel continuous. Crucially, expectations around fulfillment have also evolved. Fast is still good, but dependable promises now matter more. Real-time stock visibility, honest delivery dates, and painless returns are becoming core loyalty drivers with the success of models like Argos's Same Day and M&S Click and Collect, showing the power of store networks when paired with strong orchestration and clear communication. Now, finally, on this point, discovery and purchase are collapsing into a single moment. Social media and embedded content have become the new storefront, particularly for younger audiences. Millennials increasingly buy through platforms like Instagram, while Gen Z are already twice as likely to purchase through social channels, with TikTok acting as both a search engine and the checkout. Gen Alpha is following suit, heavily influenced by creators and content on YouTube. But for retailers in 2026, the key behavioral shifts to understand are this expectation of seamless, unified journeys, a heightened demand for trustworthy, kept promises rather than just speed, and a discovery to purchase path that now lives largely within social and content ecosystems.
So you covered quite a lot of ground there, Oscar, which is fantastic, and I'm sure we'll delve into quite a lot of that throughout the course of the conversation. But I want to delve into one aspect of what you mentioned first, which is personalization. Obviously, it's critical to building customer loyalty, but many retailers are struggling to implement it effectively. So what do you see as the biggest barriers? And I guess, how can they overcome them?
So the biggest barrier to effective personalization is that many retailers still treat loyalty as a transactional scheme of points and perks rather than something deeper. In 2025 and beyond, customers are not just looking for rewards, they're looking for resonance. They want brands to reflect their values, respect their time, and recognize them as individuals and not just order numbers. Loyalty is now built on emotional engagement as much as financial benefits. The biggest barrier to effective personalization is that retailers still treat loyalty as transactional schemes of points and perks rather than something deeper. In 2025 and beyond, customers are not just looking for rewards, they're looking for resonance. They want brands to reflect their values, respect their time, and recognize them as individuals, not just numbers. So loyalty is now built on emotional engagement as much as functional benefits. When brands show they genuinely care, for example, by addressing social and environmental issues, alongside tailoring offers and content, customers are far more likely to stay loyal because they feel aligned and not just incentivized. Behind the scenes, the main operational blocker is fragmented data. Most personalization efforts fail because customer information is scattered across channels and touch points. E-commerce here, point of sale there, apps somewhere else, and then loyalty is in its own silo. So when orders, identities, and interactions aren't stitched together, retailers can't build a coherent view of the customer. So personalization ends up being generic segments or guesswork. Overcoming this requires a strong data foundation, a central data layer, a CDP-grade customer profile feeding every channel from a single source of truth. Retailers that win at personalization use unified IDs across point of sale, e-commerce, and apps so that marketing, store teams, and order management all work from the same customer record. Phase one is getting this data infrastructure and partner ecosystem right. Only then does it make sense to layer in AI, journey logic, and more advanced decisioning. A barrier to be considered is the perception, often justified, that personalization can feel creepy or intrusive. Customers are increasingly sensitive to how their data is collected and used. The way through this is explicit transparency and a clear value exchange. Brands need to explain, in plain language, what data they use, why they use it, and how this benefits the customer, and then consistently deliver on that promise through helpful, timely, and relevant experiences. Gymshark's loyalty program is a strong example of overcoming these barriers. Instead of just offering discounts, it combines retail data with behavior from its training app, rewarding people for shopping, sharing, and working out. This turns personalization into an ecosystem that reflects customers' lifestyles and the brand's community values. In essence, the path to effective personalization is clear. Fix the data foundations, unify identities, design privacy and consent in from the start, and focus on relevance that feels like support and not surveillance.
Yeah, you raise a really interesting point there, and I think it's something that both consumers and lots of retailers see as a pain point. That is the balance between privacy and personalization, which so often do seem at odds. So how, in your view, Oscar, can retailers actually balance the need for data-driven experiences with growing consumer concerns around that oh-so-important data privacy?
Retailers can balance privacy and personalization by reframing data use as a relationship and not a surveillance system. So modern loyalty is about emotional connection as much as rewards. Customers are happy to share data when it's used responsibly to surprise, delight, and genuinely improve their experience. This means tailoring perks, content, and experiences in ways that feel human and authentic rather than purely algorithmic. Brands that tell real stories, build communities, and show up in meaningful ways, for example, again, Gymshark, I've got to say I'm a fan, are hosting fitness classes and events, or Rituals, the brand, turning stores into well-being destinations, demonstrate that data-driven engagement can still feel warm, personal, and values-led. Practically, the balance starts with positioning personalization as help that the customer opts into, not something done to them. Retailers should offer clear, tangible benefits in exchange for this data: better sizing, quicker service, smarter recommendations, progression-based rewards, and back this up with explicit revocable consent. Unifying customer data and consent is critical. Service, content and offers need to read from the same profile and the same permission set with IDs mapped across point of sale, e-commerce and apps, and consent flags attached to each profile. This creates a CDP-grade spine that allows personalization to be both effective and respectful, ensuring store clienteling and marketing teams all honor the same choices. Finally, transparency should be treated as a core part of the user experience. Retailers can build trust by clearly showing what data is used and why. Using just-in-time notices, we use your size history to reduce returns. Simple privacy controls, granular toggles, and plain language summaries. Crucially, customers should be able to change their preferences at any time without losing basic functionality, such as access to past orders or receipts.
So I guess with all of that in mind, Oscar, a key question may well then be, where are the friction points? What are the most friction points in the customer journey? And how then can retailers minimise them or remove them as much as is feasibly possible?
In 2026, the most common friction points in the customer journey are all variations of the same problem. Convenience that looks good on paper, but breaks down in practice. Customers now expect effortless, integrated, on-demand everything. Slow or rigid delivery options, surprise stockouts, clunky returns, and being forced into channels they don't naturally use all feel disproportionately frustrating. One of the biggest pain points is around speed and flexibility of fulfillment. It's not just about next day delivery anymore. It's about choice and transparency. Some shoppers want curbside pickup within an hour. Others prefer lockers because they're never home. And many are just happy with slower delivery if it's cheaper and more sustainable. When retailers can't offer a range of options, or when real-time stock isn't accurate and delivery promises slip, trust and conversion suffer. Hassle-free returns are another critical friction point. If customers can't easily drop a parcel at a local shop, return in store, or arrange a simple pickup, they hesitate to buy in the first place. A second major source of friction is not being where the customer is. Increasingly, discovery and purchase happen on social platforms and within messaging apps rather than on the brand's own website. When retailers treat these channels purely as marketing rather than a full shopping touchpoint, they force customers to break the see it, want it, buy it flow and jump through extra hoops. Social commerce, like shopping and conversational commerce, like WhatsApp, for example, show how powerful it is when entertainment and purchase sit in one seamless experience. The lesson is that convenience isn't about being everywhere. It's about being outstanding in the places your customers actually use. To remove these friction points, retailers need to treat convenient as a design principle end to end. That means offering a clear set of fulfillment and return options that match real customer needs, backed by accurate real-time stock visibility and honest delivery promises. It also means using data to position inventory closer to demand, optimizing routing, and, where appropriate, partnering with third parties and last-mile fulfillment so that speed and flexibility are sustainable, not just expensive giveaways. On the front end, retailers should invest in the channels that matter most to their audience, whether that's TikTok, Instagram, live streams, messaging, or the traditional web, and make those experiences as streamlined as possible rather than spreading thinly across every platform. Ultimately, the easiest way to reduce friction is to make it as simple and fast as possible for customers to discover, decide, and receive your products in the context they already live in.
So there's a really interesting thing happening within the retail industry where ethics and brand purpose are obviously more important than ever, but we know that consumers are reluctant to pay extra for sustainability. So that leaves quite a conundrum for retailers. How can they integrate ethical practices into their business without compromising on affordability? That seems like a real challenge.
Certainly a big one. Retailers can integrate ethics and sustainability without compromising affordability by treating them as core operating principles. rather than expensive add-ons. The starting point is brand purpose. Consumers increasingly expect retailers to stand for something beyond profit, whether that's environmental responsibility, social impact, or community support. Patagonia is a classic example. Purpose is woven into everything, from its "Don't Buy This Jacket" campaign and lifetime repair guarantees and its worn wear resale program. The model shows that designing for durability, repair and reuse can deepen loyalty and unlock new revenue streams without simply charging more. Similar circular approaches from brands like John Lewis with their take-back schemes or Arc'teryx with their Rebird prove that repair, resale and take-back can create both emotional loyalty and additional margin, especially when retailers start with one category, measure the economics and scale what works. The real unlock, though, is to see sustainability as an operational discipline, not a marketing story. Rethinking product design, sourcing, fulfillment, and returns through a sustainability lens often reduces waste and cost at the same time. Smarter sizing tools, better product imagery, and more accurate descriptions can cut down returns, which lowers both carbon and logistics costs. Localized restocking, improved packaging, and optimized reverse logistics make the process leaner as well as greener. Likewise, investing in low-impact materials, stronger supplier standards, and circular design can create more resilient supply chains and fewer write-offs over time. None of this requires customers to pay a premium. It requires retailers to design smarter systems. Finally, transparency is a powerful, low-cost lever. Instead of green PR, retailers can show provenance and impact at the point of decision, where products are made, what materials are used, and a trade-off between delivery options, and offer the greenest option at checkout without forcing it. Giving customers clear information and real choice builds trust and encourages sustainable behavior without adding to basket price. Publishing honest progress against sustainability targets rather than perfection also helps convert skeptics and reinforces brand credibility. In this way, ethics and affordability become aligned. By building greener, more circular, more efficient systems, retailers can do the right thing for people and planet while protecting margins and future-proofing their business.
So something else that we also really have to talk about, Oscar, is marketplaces and social commerce, something you've mentioned already. They're continuously reshaping online retail. So do you see these channels as complementary or competitive to traditional e-commerce? And actually, how should retailers approach them strategically?
I see marketplaces and social commerce as fundamentally complementary to traditional e-commerce, but only if retailers integrate them properly. The safest strategic mindset is to treat them as powerful discovery and acquisition channels that feed into one unified brand experience rather than separate shops that cannibalize your own site. That means using your unified commerce stack, OMS and CDP, to keep catalog, pricing, and inventory consistent and real-time across every channel. So whether a customer meets you on TikTok, Amazon, Vinted, on your own site, they're seeing the same truth and can move between touch points without friction. Social commerce in particular has become the new front door. TikTok shop-style journeys collapse inspiration and purchase into a single in-app moment, turning entertainment into instant shopping. Strategically, the job here is operational more than conceptual. Integrate your product catalog and stock with social platforms, make content natively shoppable, and minimize the jump from watching to checkout. In parallel, marketplaces and resale platforms like Vinted, The RealReal, and Zalando, pre-owned, show how brands can plug into existing ecosystems or emulate those mechanics to tap into circular, value-conscious demand. Together, these channels can extend reach, support sustainability goals, and attract new audiences. So long as retailers design them as coherent extensions of their core e-commerce, not disconnected side projects.
Yeah, but so we can't really talk about the emergence of marketplaces and social commerce without, of course, addressing the Gen Z of it all. They're driving significant change in retail expectations, this we know. So how should businesses adapt their CX strategies to meet the expectations of younger consumers, both shoppers and on the B2B side as decision makers?
Businesses need to adapt their customer experience strategies for Gen Z, obviously, and soon Gen Alpha, by recognising both their growing economic power and their outsized influence on older generations' buying decisions. These are true digital natives, raised on smartphones, social media, streaming and gaming. So they benchmark every interaction against the best experiences they've seen online, not just within a single category. For them, loyalty isn't driven by points and vouchers alone. Those are table stakes. What matters is whether a brand feels personal, purposeful, and convenient. That means relevant content and offers, frictionless journeys, and a clear sense that brand stands for something they believe in, from sustainability to social issues. Nike Plus is a great example. Loyalty feels like membership, with exclusive content, access, and experiences rather than just discounts. To meet those expectations, customer experience needs to move from one-size-fits-all to data-driven and human-centric. Younger consumers want recognition, exclusivity, and community, so brands should design loyalty around participation, member-only experiences, creator collaborations, progression mechanics, and use real-time data to keep rewards and messaging contextual across all channels. At the same time, time itself is becoming a core loyalty driver. Streamlined browsing, intuitive user experience, fast and flexible fulfillment, and simple problem resolution often matter more to Gen Z than complex reward structures. This carries over into B2B, where younger decision makers expect the tools, platforms, and service they buy to be as seamless, personalized, and on demand as their favorite consumer apps. Now, underpinning all of this is values alignment and trust. Gen Z actively seeks brands that reflect who they are or aspire to be, so transparency in sourcing, labor, and environmental impact is non-negotiable. Brands like Allbirds and Ascot show how radical transparency and ethical production can turn loyalty into a vote of alignment rather than a mere convenience. However, the data that powers these experiences must be handled carefully. Younger shoppers and B2B buyers expect personalization to be balanced with strong privacy controls and clear consent. Businesses that design customer experience around the trio of personal, purposeful, and convenient, and back it with responsible data use and visible action on their promises, will be best placed to win and keep this generation, whether they are shopping for themselves or signing off on enterprise contracts.
So for our audience that don't know, the conversation that we're having today actually comes off the back of a fantastic report that we've put out in collaboration with Columbus, and you can check that out in the description below. But my question for you, Oscar, is what does a culture of continuous improvement actually look like in retail, and perhaps what practical steps can businesses take to embed that?
So a true culture of continuous improvement in retail looks less like occasional transformational projects and more like a disciplined pilot, prove, scale, repeat loop. Rather than trying to overhaul everything at once, retailers should pick one high impact initiative per strategic pillar, launch a small contained pilot, and measure its effect on outcomes such as conversion rate, repeat purchase, and time to resolution. Only the ideas that demonstrably move these metrics should be scaled, often via localized rollouts first, for example, trialing same-day delivery in a single city before extending it nationally. This approach builds confidence, capability, and a track record of evidence-based change. Underpinning this is a clear metric-led operating rhythm. Conversion, average order value, order processing time, inventory turnover, and NPS should become the North Star KPIs, reviewed on a regular cadence and used to guide priorities. Incentives need to be tied to these outcomes, and work that doesn't shift the numbers should be retired quickly to avoid innovation theatre, where activity is high but impact is low. Practically, this means treating CRO as an ongoing habit rather than a one-off project. Running rolling tests across navigation, product pages, checkout and post-purchase journeys using behavioral analytics, sizing tools and clearer content to improve the quality of sales and reduce returns. And leaning from best practice playbooks from leaders like Zalando, ASOS and Glossier. When experimentation and learning are built into everyday operations, continuous improvement stops being a slogan and becomes the way the business runs.
So many businesses, though, still see CX improvements as a nice to have rather than, say, a revenue driver. So how do you convince business leaders that investing in CX actually directly impacts the bottom line? Something that's actually really hard to do in this day and age where profits are slim and budgets are very much scrutinized.
Great question, and one that comes up a lot in our roundtables. So to convince business leaders that CX is a revenue driver and not just a nice to have, you've got to connect experience directly to hard commercial outcomes. At an operational level, systems like order management may not seem glamorous, but they are the glue that holds a modern retail journey together. A well-implemented OMS ensures accurate stock, reliable delivery promises, and smooth fulfillment across channels, which in turn protects brand trust, reduces costly errors, and enables service like click and collect or ship from store. In a world where expectations are high and disruption is constant, this isn't hygiene. It's an engine of resilience and growth. On the front end, CRO, or conversion rate optimization, is the clearest proof that better experiences equal more revenue. CRO systematically aligns UX, data, content, and operations to remove friction, increase conversion, and reduce returns without spending more on traffic. Retailers like Zalando, ASOS, Glossier have shown how features such as predictive sizing, mobile-first journeys, and rich community content can both lift conversion rates and cut waste. Similarly, unified commerce integrating channels, customer data, and fulfillment doesn't just feel better for customers. It drives measurable improvements in average order value, repeat purchase rate, inventory turnover, and cost to serve. When you track metrics like sales growth, basket size, progress time, and retention before and after CX improvements, it becomes clear that investing in experience is not a soft benefit. It is a disciplined way to grow revenue, protect your margin, and future-proof the business.
So coming back to the themes of the report, it actually really highlights the cost of inaction. If a retailer fails to evolve its customer experience strategy in the next 5 years, what, in your view, are the likely consequences of that, as we've kind of outlined it in our report together?
If a retailer fails to evolve its customer experience strategy over the next few years, the consequences will be both rapid and compounding. When CX stands still, customers drift fast. Today's expectations are firmly set around experiences that feel personal, purposeful, and convenient. A phrase that I'm coining and will be using a lot. Any brand that remains generic effectively trains shoppers to ignore it. Loyalty becomes fragile. Churn increases, and competitors that deliver tailored, useful experiences in every moment, like Gymshark with its gamified loyalty or Canada Goose with its bookable proof of quality store experiences, will capture the attention and share the wallet while one-size-fits-all retailers fade away into the background. Under the surface, operational stagnation is just as dangerous. Without a robust OMS, even the best front-end design will fall apart after the click. Stock promises are broken, fulfillment becomes inconsistent, and cost quietly rises. As marketplace models, distributed inventory, and hybrid journeys become the norm, agility is no longer optional. OMS has effectively become the backbone of unified commerce, and neglecting it means higher waste, lower profitability, and the inability to deliver on what you sell. At the same time, delaying AI adoption creates a widening productivity and experience gap. Competitors will use AI to optimize assortment, service, and content, achieving better outcomes at lower cost while you pay more to deliver slower, less relevant experiences. Finally here, In a world of tightening regulation and rising expectations around ethics, data, and transparency, inaction carries increasing regulatory and reputational risk. Customers and regulators alike now expect evidence, not just statements. Failing to move on purpose, sustainability and data governance risks fines, erosion of trust, and ultimately loss of license to operate in the eyes of your customers.
So unfortunately, we don't have much time left, Oscar, but I want to squeeze in a couple more questions if I can. The first one is, many key innovators seem to be facing internal challenge, and this is particularly true in finances, when trying to increase efficiency or efficacy via emerging solutions. So what's your advice on gaining that oh so important internal advocacy that you need to make real change?
My advice is to frame emerging solutions not as new tech, but as concrete financial levers, and to prove this with focused pilots. For example, a modern OMS is far more than an order router. It frees up working capital by giving real-time visibility across all stock locations, so you can reduce safety stock, balance inventory between stores and warehouses, and unlock cash that would otherwise sit on shelves. It also cuts markdowns by surfacing idle stock into online channels or high demand regions before it needs heavy discounting, and it improves returns orchestration so products get back into sellable inventory faster with lower handling and reverse logistics costs. Add in the impact on customer service, fewer where's my orders, contacts, and faster first contact resolution, because everyone has access to the same real-time data, and you're no longer talking about the CX nice to have. You're talking about structural improvements in margin and cost to serve. To gain internal advocacy, especially from finance and senior leadership, you need to lead with this story. Build a business case anchored in the KPIs they care about. Conversion lift, order processing time, inventory turns, return rate, markdown reduction, and customer contact volume. Show how a phased rollout can be modeled in terms of payback period and risk, rather than asking for a big bang investment. Then adopt a pilot, prove, productize, scale mindset. Run targeted pilots in one region, category, or channel, measure the financial impact rigorously, and turn successful experiments into standard processes baked into everyday workflows. Use real examples, whether from your own pilots or credible external case studies, to demonstrate that similar retailers have already turned OMS, AI, or unified commerce into profit levers, not science projects. Ultimately, finance teams buy outcomes, not demos. So the more you can quantify the operational and financial upside of CX and efficiency initiatives, the easier it becomes to secure internal advocacy and ongoing investment.
Well, I'm really, really sorry to say, Oscar, that we're very nearly out of time, but I'm going to squeeze in one last question. It's a bit of a hokey one, but go with it. I'd love to hear what your answer is to this. If you had one piece of actionable advice for retailers looking to improve the health of their online retail this year, what would that one piece of advice be?
Well, the great crescendo, eh? If I had to give one piece of actionable advice, it would be this. Make experimentation and CRO a weekly habit and not an occasional project. The retailers that stay healthy and grow this year aren't the ones with the biggest tech stack. They're the ones who move fastest, test boldly, and keep aligning technology with real business value. Start with your customers and focus relentlessly on their journeys that matter most to revenue. Homepage to product page to checkout. Run a rolling test and learn program to remove friction from these paths with clearer content, stronger size and fit guidance, faster forms, and fewer steps. This is the quickest way to grow revenue without increasing media spend, and it has the added benefit of reducing returns by helping customers make better decisions that first time. Around that, treat agility as your operating principle. Use data and customer insight to identify the biggest friction points and turn them into testable opportunities. Make sure your tech stack serves your goals rather than dictating them. Invest in training and empowering your team so that they can act on insights and build partnerships that help you move further faster. And finally, measure progress not just in profit, but in loyalty, satisfaction, and sustainability. If you embed this continuous improvement mindset into your online retail operation, everything else, from personalization and OMS to loyalty and CX, becomes easier to evolve and justify.
Amazing. Well, it's been a huge pleasure to speak to you, Oscar. Thank you so much for your time. And to our audience, you can find the report that we've been alluding to down below. So go and check that out. It's really, really worth a read. And also, Oscar, a kind of secret final question for you. If our audience do want to get in touch and maybe talk a bit more about this, what's the best way that they can do that?
They are more than welcome to contact me directly. My details, I'm sure, will be added to this. Of course, I'm oscar.strachan at columbusglobal.com, but anyone on our team will be very happy to speak with you, fill you in, and help you continue this journey.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Oscar.
Thank you.